Good morning. Today, I'm planning to go to two stories in the Old Testament, and they are very wonderful stories to me. I'll read them. I have a version here that probably none of you have, and it's out of print, I think. That's okay. It's called the deaf version, considered so deaf people should be able to understand better, written in a simple form. We've been studying about God a bit. A couple weeks ago we studied God, and then we studied about sinfall, and today I just like to read some stories that God and the people were like, just like a life story out of the Bible, and a miraculous story that's recorded in the Bible is the Red Sea, the crossing of the Red Sea. I just like to read the praise song after they crossed the sea, what they were singing then. Then Moses and the people of Israel began singing this song to the Lord. I will sing to the Lord. He has done great things. He threw horse and rider into sea. The Lord is my strength. He saves me, and I sing songs of praise to him. The Lord is my God, and I praise him. The Lord is the God of my ancestors, and I honor him. The Lord is a great soldier. The Lord is the name. The Lord is his name. He threw Pharaoh's chariots and soldiers into the sea. Pharaoh's very best soldiers drowned in the Red Sea. And then verse 5 I'm going to read. This is Exodus 15, verse 5. Sometimes there's the argument where in the Red Sea or what happened. Was it in the shallow or in the deep? I'll read here some. The deep water covered them. Okay, now you can believe the Bible or you don't, whatever you choose to. The deep water covered them. And they sank to the bottom like rocks. How long does a rock sink? I mean, how deep does it have to water be that a rock can start to sink? If it's only just a little bit, it doesn't sink. It's just touching the ground, right? If a rock sinks, it's going, and that tells us, obviously, it was deep water because it was sinking. They were sinking. You cannot sink if there's just shallow water. Your right arm is amazingly strong. Lord, your right arm shatters the enemy. In your great majesty, you destroyed the man who stood against you. Your anger destroyed them like fire burning straw. The wind you sent in anger piled the water high. Piled the water high. I believe that's true. The flowing water became a solid wall. The sea became solid to the deepest part. Where? So this is the deepest part. So you go and find the deepest part of the sea. That's where it was, I guess, if we want to understand what they're saying. The deepest. The enemy said, I have chased them and catched them. I'll take all their riches. I'll take it all with my sword. I'll take everything for myself. But you blew on them and covered them with the sea. They sank like lead into the deep sea. Verse 11. Are there any gods like the Lord? No, there are no gods like you. You are wonderfully holy. You are amazingly powerful. You do great miracles. You could raise your right hand and destroy the world, but with your kindness, you led the people you saved. And with your strength, you led them to your holy, pleasant land. The other nations will hear this story, and they will be frightened, and that's true. We can read how people, 40 years later, they were frightened from the story that they've been hearing. Rahab, the one that saved the spies, let them down through the window. She said, "We heard what happened at the Red Sea and we are afraid." So they were hearing that and they were frightened. "The people of Philistia will shake with fear. The leaders of Edom will shake with fear. The leaders of Moab will shake with fear. The people of Canaan will lose courage." And they sure did. "Those people will be filled with fear when they use their strength. They will be as still as rock until the Lord's people pass by, until the people you have made pass by. You will lead your people to your mountain. You will let them live near the place you prepared for your throne. Master, you will build your temple." "The Lord will rule forever and ever." Yes, it really happened. What is he saying here? Yes, it really happened. Pharaoh's horses and riders and chariots went into the sea, and the Lord brought all the water of the sea down on top of them. If it was just on one side in a little shallow part, then it couldn't be all the water on top of them. I'm just trying to bring that truth to pass into our mind, that it must be deep water there, not just a little shallow creek, even though the debate is there. "Then Errol's sister..." Okay, that's not the part. And then I like to page on to Numbers 11. I like to read that story. This is an amazing story, Numbers 11. The people are complaining, and then... well, let's just read a story. Let's look at what's happening here. Here's the people of Israel that are complaining, and then there's the foreigners that joined the people of Israel when they left Egypt. They are also complaining, and then Moses is complaining. Wow, I'm surprised how Moses can complain. We'll read about that. And then God is... just about sounds like he's complaining too. He's giving it to Moses. "Hey, I'm this God here, and I haven't changed. I'm still God." And he's kind of scolding Moses for being afraid and not believing in him. And then they organized their camp a bit with getting more leaders to it. And then they start to prophesy. And two of the guys weren't there with the crowd, and they were prophesying in the camp, and then they were all stirred up. And, "Hey, they need to be stopped." And then Moses, "Oh, I wish all of them prophesy everywhere." That's good, Moses. And then in the last part of the chapter, quail comes, and God becomes very angry accordingly to the people's behavior. I like to look at that a bit. I've been reading this happening here, and I believe I understand why God became angry at the Israelites. We have Thanksgiving. Are we matching up with the Israelites or not? Let's see. We'll look into that once we get there. Okay, starting in verse 1. "The people started complaining about their troubles. The Lord heard their complaints. The Lord heard these things and became angry." The Lord became angry about Israel complaining. And then he sent fire from the Lord burning among the people. The fire burned some of the areas of the edges of the camp. So the people cried to Moses for help. Moses prayed to the Lord, and the fire stopped. So that place was called Taberah. The people gave the place that name because the Lord caused the fire to burn in their camp. And then verse 4, "The foreigners that had joined the people of Israel began wanting other things to eat. Soon, all the people of Israel began complaining again. the people said, "We want to eat meat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt. That fish cost us nothing. The fish was free for us." I mean, I don't know if you ever experienced that, if you've been somewhere in a program or something that you can have as much as you want for nothing. And when you're not in it anymore, you think about it sometimes. Wow, I remember, yeah, it was good. We had as much of that certain kind as we want. Or maybe you go back and you think of a bumper crop of potatoes or whatever, I don't know. But anyways, they were thinking back, it cost them nothing. They could have as many fish as they wanted, it didn't cost them. We also had good vegetables like cucumbers and melons and chives, I'm not sure what that is, onions and garlic. But now we have lost our strength. They become weak. I am not sure what happened, but they believe they lost their strength. We never ate anything. It's like we're not even having anything to eat. And they had only this manna. I mean, we do have this manna. We have nothing to eat, but yeah, well, we do have some manna, but rather nothing to eat. The manna was like some small caramel seed, and it looked like gum from a tree. The people gathered the manna, then they used rocks to crush it and cook it in a pot. Or they ground it up into flour and made thin cakes with it. The cakes tasted like sweet cakes cooked with olive oil. The manna fell on the ground each night when the ground became wet with dew. Moses heard the people complaining. People from every family were sitting by their tents and complaining. Oh, they were scattered around, had all their tents out, and they were sitting at their tent and they were complaining. This manna, and they're complaining about the manna. My, if we only had some meat. I'd like to have some meat. The Lord became very angry, and this made Moses very upset. Just because the Lord got angry about his people, Moses became angry. That, why are you getting angry, Lord? Now Moses is getting angry about the Lord, that he's getting angry. Moses asked the Lord, "Lord, why did you bring this trouble on the..." Okay. "Lord, why did you bring this trouble on me? I am your servant. Why did I..." I'm getting a little confused. "What did I do wrong? What did I do to upset you?" I guess he's not getting quite the balance. Probably God wasn't so upset about Moses, but "Why did you give me responsibility over all these people? You know that I am not the father of all these people." Very obvious, he's not the father of all the people. Well, anyway, he says he's not. "You know that I did not give birth to them all, but I must take care of them like a nurse carrying a baby in her arms. Why do you force me to do this?" We were just hearing how he was able to live in the sanctuary rather than what did Ray say? Obviously, he went back to some other place now. "Why do you force me to carry them to the land that you promised to your fathers? I don't have enough meat for all these people. And they continue complaining to me. They say, 'Give us meat to eat.' I cannot take care of all these people alone. The burden is too heavy for me. If you plan to continue giving me this trouble, then kill me now. If you accept me as your servant, then let me die now." This is crazy. He's saying, "If you accept me as your servant, then kill me." How does that work? Now, if I am your good servant, then kill me. That's reverse. It's crossing. It doesn't work that way. If I'm a good servant, then kill me. "If you accept me as your servant, then let me die now. Then I will be finished with all my problems." Now the Lord's taking his turn to speak. The Lord said to Moses, "Bring to me 70 of the elders of Israel. These men are the elders among the people. Bring them to the meeting tent let them stand there with you, and then I will come down and speak with you there. The Spirit is on you now, but I will give up, and I will also give some of that Spirit to them. Then they will help you take care of the people. In this way, you will not have to be responsible for all these people alone. Tell these things to the people. Make yourselves ready for tomorrow. Tomorrow you will eat meat. Tomorrow they can eat meat. The Lord heard you when you cried. The Lord heard your words when you said, "We need meat to eat. It was better for us in Egypt." So now the Lord will give you meat, and you will eat it. You will eat it for more than one day, or two, or three, or five, or 10, or even 20 days. You will eat that meat for a whole month. You will eat the meat until you are sick of it. This will happen to you because you complain against the Lord. The Lord lives among you and knows what you need. This is a very good verse in here. The Lord lives among you and knows what you need. That's still that way today. He lives among us and He knows what we need. Sometimes we don't realize that He lives amongst us, but He does. But you cried and complained to Him. You said, "Why did we ever leave Egypt?" Now Moses is coming back and he's having some questions. Moses said, "Lord, there are 600,000 men walking around here, and you say, 'I will give them enough meat to eat for a whole month.' If we were to kill all of the sheep and cattle, then would still not be enough to feed this many people for a month." And he's reasoning again. "And if we cut all the fish in the sea, it would not be enough for them." I wonder what he's thinking. Maybe he doesn't know how big the sea is. Maybe he's talking about a different sea than what we know. I don't know. But he doesn't believe that the sea is having enough fish for all of them. But the Lord said to Moses, "Don't limit the power of the Lord." What does that mean? Is Moses able to limit the Lord's power? But God says, "Don't do it, Moses. Don't limit the power of the Lord. You will see that I can do things I say I can do." That's good. God says He's able to do things. The things He's saying he can do them. So Moses went out to speak with the people. Moses told them what the Lord said. Then Moses gathered 70 of the elders together. Moses told them to stand around the tent. Then the Lord came down in the cloud and spoke to Moses. The Spirit was on Moses. The Lord put the same Spirit on the 70 elders. After the Spirit came down on them, they began to prophesy. But that was the only time these men ever did this. That was the only time they ever prophesied, and it was only during that time when they were at the temple there. Two of the elders, Eldah and Medah, did not come out to the tent. Their names were on the list of elders, but they stayed in the camp. But the Spirit also came on them, and they began prophesying in the camp. A young man ran and told Moses. The man said, "Eldah and Medah are prophesying in camp." Joshua, son of Nun, said to Moses, "Moses, sir, you must stop them." Joshua had been Moses' helper since Joshua was a young boy. And this is what he's thinking. He's thinking that it's not right. Joshua is thinking it's not right if people are prophesying if they're not in the crowd. But Moses answered, I like this what Moses is saying. "Are you afraid the people will think that I am not the leader now? I wish that all the Lord's people were able to prophesy. I wish that the Lord would put His Spirit on all of them." Then Moses and the leaders of Israel went back to the camp. Well, that's very good. It would have been so good if they all had the Spirit of the Lord on them. That would have made the work much easier. And I think that's a thing we should think and have in our mind, that is, if the Spirit of the Lord is upon us, then We don't need to be overwhelmed like Moses was here. We can trust the Lord that His Spirit is upon the people and He is able to work in the people. And if the Spirit of the Lord is not upon the people, then I believe there's Christ's body problem, church problem. Now we have the story about the quails. I like this story. It's translating the odd numbers into measurements that we understand. And it opened my eyes a bit. I became angry too, just thinking about this. Then the Lord made a powerful wind to blow in from the sea. The wind blew quail into that area. The quail flew all around the camp. There were so many quail that the ground was covered. The ground was covered. Can you imagine if you butcher chicken and the ground be covered with birds, that there be many? If there's a dead bird, it seems much more heavier. It just sinks to the ground. If it's alive, it flies around. It seems like a light bird. But once it's dead, it's a heavy bird. I don't know if you ever thought about it. But now, I don't know if they were dead or not. And let's see. The quail were about 3 feet deep on the ground. That's 3 feet. It's about here, isn't it? More or less this deep. I'm not quite sure how they were able to walk around and to live in it, but there was lots of quail, about 3 feet deep. And then there were quail in every direction as far as a man can walk in one day. I don't know, what was that? Let's see, up to Listowel. And then, verse 32, the people went crazy. The people went crazy. Let's see what they did. They went out and gathered quail all that day and all that night. And they gathered quail all the next day too. That's straight 36 hours. Those that catch chicken, they know how many chicken they can catch in a few hours. These, they went straight 36 hours. And they gathered quail. I like to listen to this one here. The smallest amount of any person gathered was 60 bushels. The smallest amount that any person gathered was 60 bushels. I like just to think that Brother Daniel, he's getting old, but he for sure gathered at least 60 bushels. All the rest got more. All the rest got more, but he at least got 60. You think about it. This would last them for a month. And if they would want to finish 60 bushels in a month, that means 2 bushels in a day for one. How much is two bushels? That's 120 pounds. 120. You eat your own weight in a day of meat. And I understand that the Lord became angry. Crazy. That's the one that has the least. But now let's look at some of these young men. They could carry more than that. They have gathered more. You can just imagine, the one that is the weakest and the sickest, he did this. Well, we can be glad we don't take that much. We never ate double our amount or anything like that in a day on Thanksgiving, so we're not following this picture. Ah, that's good. Okay. But still, the attitude. Then the people spread the quail meat all around the camp to dry in the sun. It was good. People began to eat the meat, but the Lord became very angry. While the meat was still in their mouth, before the people could finish eating it, the Lord caused people to become very sick. Many people died and were buried in that place. So the people named that place Kibroth Hattaavah. They gave that place that name because that is the place they buried the people who had a strong desire for meat. So we can learn a couple things in this story. We can see how it is when people complain and how easily people are influenced. If foreigners complain, then we just join in. If somebody else complains, then we just jump in and help complain. And then if God starts to do something about it and we believe it's so wrong, or if somebody else, let's say if somebody in God's authority starts to do something about it, that there's a problem in the camp or in this fellowship, there's a problem, and then we start to believe it's wrong what they're doing because we've been suffering so hard or whatever. And then the goodness of God, oh, that's so good. He comes and then he teaches people while we're all in a disorder. He comes and teaches us truths. He comes and tells us that, no, I am still able to do what I say I can do. I would like to finish my classes or whatever I've been having here today. I have not been able to cover everything I was wanting to, but we still have a little bit more time. I like to look into some of the prophecies that were from the Old Testament, were prophesied in the Old Testament, and it happened in the New. Let's read this side, the Old Testament, and then the happening in this side. I will give a reference here, and then the fulfillment on this side, and we'll look some into that the happenings of how Jesus Christ came, how he was prophesied, and how he came. We'll look into that for a few minutes, and then we'll stop, and then we'll go on and have somebody else come for classes. We're getting ready to leave, go to Belize. Just like to... write a few dates here, but I guess no markers. Okay. Oh, how would we do this? Just with a finger? Can't see that. Okay. We are planning to leave in 2 weeks, Tuesday, which is the 25th of March. No. Of October, and return in March. Oh, thank you. Thanks a lot. Which is on a Tuesday. And we'd like to come back in March, the 22nd, which is on a Thursday. And we do have a scheduled meeting in Belize in November. Sixteen. 2:23, which would be we could call it a tent meeting or a village. And I like to see if we could put up the tent again in January in a village. Who would like to be there? I'll just put that a blank. We could have volunteers for that time to come and just be there. I plan to stick up a little bit of information probably back on the board there, just tack some paper on that you could read if you like to. Some of it is a suggested schedule, how the week probably could run, when to get up and have our breakfasts, and which hours we would be working in the villages, and then what time it would take to go out and meet the people, have children's class and evening services, some of those things just kind of written out on paper, and also a little writing on what we believe, or what I believe, I guess, what we believe as much as I. I'd like to put it out sometime, maybe by next week or so, I don't know. That what I wrote on the paper, is that good enough to stick out? If that's good enough, then I probably will stick up a copy there pretty soon. Okay, let's look into the prophecy of Jesus Christ being the descendant of David. Isaiah 9, verse 7. Would you like to read that? And then the fulfillment is in Matthew 1, verse 1, if you'd be willing to read that, Jonathan. And then the next one is Isaiah 7, verse 14. And then Matthew 1, 22 and 23. Okay, the first one is about David's family. Should we have a speaker, a mic for that? Do you have the mic available? And then another one on the other side.
Of the increase of his government and peace, there shall be no end upon the throne of David, and upon his kingdom to order it and to establish it with judgment and with justice from henceforth, even forever. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will perform this.
Okay. It's not going to end. It'd be forever. Jonathan likes to read fulfillment from Matthew 1, verse 1, from David's...
The book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham.
Okay, there we have that. It's connecting there. And then we have Isaiah 7, verse 14 here by... sorry, I forget names, but yes,
Lawrence.
That's right. I knew your name, but sometimes it just slips.
Verse 14.
And he will be a sanctuary, but for both houses of Israel he will be a stone that causes men to stumble and a rock that makes them fall. And for the people of Jerusalem he will be a trap and a snare. I'm sorry, was that in chapter 8?
Chapter 7, verse 14.
Okay. Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel.
Okay. And then we'll find that in Matthew 1, verse 22 and 23, that virgin part. And Ibra wants to read that.
But But when he heard that Archias did reign in Judea in the room of his father Herod, he was afraid to go thither, notwithstanding. Now all this was done that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying, Behold, a virgin shall be with child, and shall bring forth a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which being interpreted is God with us.
What I really like of this prophecy is in time past, present. That how many years were in between here? Many. That past and present connect. That's prophecy, right? But that it really does. That past tense connects with present tense. Is a real comfort for me, and it really ensures me that we're reading and we're talking about something that it's very, very powerful. It's at least a couple thousand years powerful. It is not just what I've learned in school, and yeah, I've learned this, and I have this amount of proof. It is a much bigger realm of proof that we can have, and that comforts me when we read prophecy. And let's read some from the Psalms. George, could you read 27 verse 12? That's where he was accused. And then over, Paul, could you read Mark 14, verse 56 and 57, once George has Psalms finished?
Deliver me not over unto the will of mine enemies, for false witnesses are risen up against me, and such as breathe out cruelty.
For many bear false witness against him, but their witness agreed not together. And there arose certain and bear false witness against him, saying.
Okay, and then we'll come over to Edward. He could read Isaiah 53, verse 9. And then Gary could read Mark 15. 43 to 46. That's where he was buried among the rich.
Isaiah 53, verse 9. And he made his grave with the wicked and with the rich in his death, because he had done no violence, neither was any deceit found, neither was any deceit in his mouth.
Joseph of Arimathea, an honorable counselor, which also waited for the kingdom of God, came and went in boldly unto Pilate and craved the body of Jesus. And Pilate marveled if he were already dead, and called unto him the centurion. He asked him whether he had been any while dead. And when he knew it of the centurion, he gave the body to Joseph. And he brought fine linen and took him down and wrapped him in the linen and laid him in a sepulcher which was hewn out of a rock and rolled a stone onto the door of the sepulcher.
Okay. And there is another wonderful prophecy which is still present. That is, he'll be going back to heaven, and he's still there. Can we read Psalms 68? Dwight, could you read that? Dwight Wallman. Verse 18. Chapter 68. And then...
Thou hast ascended on high, thou hast led captivity captive. Thou hast received gifts from men, yea, for the rebellious also, that the Lord God might dwell among them.
And then Acts 1, 9.
Now when he had spoken these things while they watched, he was taken up, and a cloud received him out of their sight.
Okay, so now we do have more prophecy that we didn't look into, but there's prophecy that happened during these times, like the prophecy of the fulfilled times. We got new prophecy, which we didn't study, and they're wonderful too. Just to think about all the earthquakes and all the stories we're hearing, that's wonderful happening, so they're fulfilled now. That makes me just feel more restful in the spirit, although I might be a little bit more trembling in the flesh, but in the spirit I'm getting more rest. That I, whenever I heard that there's an earthquake or there was bad happening somewhere, then I'm just finding more rest in my spirit that, oh yeah, it must be true. It just does that in my soul over the last, I don't know, half a year, year ago, whatever, it started to work more in me, and I'm glad for that, that I again start to see that what was prophesied is really happening, and that gives me more and more confidence that past is coming in present, and I'm glad for that. Thank you.